The scary thing for me is this is during a time of relative peace, at least for the United States, if you exclude all of our proxy war activity abroad.
Zoom out and realize that the fiat currencies are going to die. It's going to create a huge mess. And almost all of your attention should be focused on how you protect yourself from that.
The money that we have is not yours. It's actually a weapon belonging to these people that created this Ponzi, right? And they decide to do with it whatever they please.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Rick and Tony with me. Guys, lots of news to get to, so let's jump right in here. First up, we have U.S. money supply growth hits a 30-month high, and the money printer looks to be going burr. I would love to hear, Tony, your comments on this. I think this was expected. It hit I think money supply growth had diminished for a couple of years, and now they're back at it. What do you think's going on?
Well, man, this is when the dam cracks start to get bigger and bigger. It starts off like this, and all of a sudden, you just have the massive eruption and everything falls apart. How do you not expect this? The Ponzi has to keep going, and the only way for it to do so is for them to print money. If they stop, they literally kill the system within minutes. Purchasing power is going to keep getting depleted, unfortunately, and those that are not able to somehow supplement, you know, with large amounts of that worthless paper to sort of like beat the rate that that bucket is leaking, they're going to have a rough time. And unfortunately, there's too big of a number of folks that fall into that category that are going to start, you know, feeling the squeeze more and more. I've been saying this for a while, man. When the pain gets, big enough, you can expect the unexpected. That is not a scene that, you know, I want to see. So opt out in Bitcoin, whatever you can, however you can. If you don't want to see your savings depleted to zero gradually, because that's what's happening, right? Start figuring out a way to save some portion of it, at least into Bitcoin, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be big. The small amounts today, you know, will lead to much bigger amounts down the road because of its deflationary nature. But if you do nothing, and this money printing is not going to stop, in fact, I don't even think it's even really begun in all its serious form. This is going to get exponentially worse for everyone who is not paying attention. So yeah, brace yourself.
The scary thing for me is this is during a time of relative peace, at least for the United States, if you exclude all of our proxy war activity abroad, and supposedly a relatively robust economy. So it doesn't surprise me to see that M2 money supply is increasing. I'll be curious to see when the next crisis hits, where we really, really fire the engine up, because we're going to have another COVID or another global financial crisis or something. Rick, what's your thought on this?
Yeah, it's an inevitability, isn't it? Like, if you study Bitcoin and how fiat money works long enough, you quickly realize that there's no way they'll ever stop printing money. They can't. The only way they could stop printing money is to just default, right? Which would cause such crazy chaos. It's never going to be politically popular to do that, right? Even the constituents don't want to do that. Yes, they may be getting robbed by this constant inflation, but actually, for most people who don't understand the game, it's maybe better for those people if they keep printing, right? Because if they stop, it will end very, very quickly. The Ponzi scheme, as Tony calls it. So what I find interesting about this, and I think the takeaway for anyone sort of new to Bitcoin, is this is the whole point of Bitcoin, really. You know, this is the whole thesis. They're going to continue to debase the money and steal from you via inflation. So Bitcoin is your way to escape that game and get the hell out of it. And like Tony, I think this gets a hell of a lot worse than people realize. So, you know, look at other countries where hyperinflation is taken place, right? Lebanon, Venezuela, you know, go back to Weimar Germany, take your pick. But you will eventually reach the point where this paper becomes genuinely worthless, as in, you know, a wheelbarrow of this stuff won't get you a loaf of bread. And that's what scares me the most. I think even maybe some Bitcoiners should maybe take this a bit more seriously, right? Because if you go on Twitter, whenever we talk about M2 money supply going through the roof, I think a lot of people get, or a lot of Bitcoiners get quite excited, right? Because they know how this works, right? As the dollar gets printed away to nothing, the value of your Bitcoin as measured in dollars is going to increase, right? That's what happens when the denominator is finite and the numerator is infinite, right? There's only one way that goes. But when they're all getting really excited, I think they should maybe consider just how much social unrest hyperinflation could lead to. And I also think that, you know, instead of maybe spending time on Twitter celebrating that this great cataclysm is coming towards us, they should maybe be focusing more on not how many dollars they might make, because eventually a bucket of them is going to be worthless anyway, and spend time thinking about, well, geez, right, if the shit really is going to hit the fan, like this is never going to stop, then how do I protect myself when that time comes? And the answers are, you know, proper self-custody, improving your privacy, improving your cybersecurity, and dare I say, you know, other things like trying to make yourself more self-sustainable, you know, at home. Can you grow food? Can you get access to the things you need to survive? Because if it does get really bad, and there's a good chance it will, you know, you're not going to be on Twitter celebrating anymore that, you know, they've pumped another $10 trillion worth of $10 trillion into the market. So for me, it's just a healthy reminder that, look, we all get so distracted and focused on, oh, the SBR is out, or I think last week some guy managed to predict the price of Bitcoin to the exact date and time, and everyone, you know, this is where all people's attention is going, is the short term, what is the Bitcoin price going to do? Zoom out and realize that the fiat currencies are going to die. It's going to create a huge mess, and almost all of your attention should be focused on how you protect yourself from that, because anything else is kind of a waste of time.
And just to chime in here, one thing people need to really start thinking about is that plan B option. Because if shit hits the fan and things get, you know, very violent or unruly in your area, even if you're financially comfortable, it's not going to be safe for you to be walking down the street. Like, life doesn't not affect you just because you're okay when everything around you is like a volcanic eruption. I've lived this in Lebanon. Believe me, it is a horror movie that you don't want to be in. You can't walk 10 meters away from your apartment without possibly being assaulted by someone, even someone that you may know, simply because, you know, they're in such a desperate and dire situation that they have no other option. So keep that in mind. You know, it's not just about the money. It's about, you know, your surroundings, your physical safety. And if you've got a family, that's even more of a priority. So plan B is not just for the rich and famous anymore. In fact, these days, it's more of a must-have insurance policy, in my opinion.
Yeah, well said. Alrighty, moving on to number two. We've got the Russian Central Bank proposes restricting crypto transactions to only the wealthiest of individuals. So to qualify for trading crypto, you have to have about 1.2 million in assets or an annual income above 580,000. Which tells me that even though, and we're going to talk about this in a moment, nation states are adopting Bitcoin crypto to some degree, it's interesting that their vision for what Bitcoin is very different than ours, which should be unsurprising to almost anyone. Rick, what's your take, and is this something you think we're going to see, like these sort of, hey, you can play with this stuff, but you can't use it in certain ways? Is this how you anticipate nation states sort of rolling out regulation and try to force adoption?
Well, I think the really interesting thing about this is focusing on who's saying it. So it said in the headline, it's a central banker who's coming out and making these statements. So that makes a lot of sense to me, because central banks are the competition, ultimately, right? Central banks are currently in charge of creating currency and the money that we use, and Bitcoin basically makes them completely obsolete, in fact totally obsolete. So, you know, the fact that they would want to put some boundaries and restrictions around this thing and try and control it and slow it down is not really a surprise. I think I'd actually, based on how they talk about it, I don't think they realize just how much trouble they're in. Because clearly this is a huge misunderstanding of open source technology, right? They say, oh, it should be restricted to only high net worth individuals. Well, how are you going to enforce that? How are you going to enforce that, right? It's open source software. Anyone can download a wallet. Anybody can download Bitcoin Core and run a node and start sending transactions. So it's just hot air coming out of essentially dodos, right? These people are already extinct. They just don't know it yet. So it's quite surprising. But you know what? I would say it should remind us again that, you know, the governments are not on your team. They don't want you to have any freedom. They don't want you to have any access to this stuff. So another good reminder for Bitcoiners is, you know, it's all well and good laughing at central bankers and politicians, but remember, they will try and impede your path to freedom. So, you know, this is why you should maybe spend some time figuring out how to buy and sell non-KYC Bitcoin so they don't even know that you have it. Because, you know, we laugh at this statement coming out of Russia, but in the EU and the UK now, they make you answer surveys, right? So you sign up to a Bitcoin exchange and they will ask you, okay, are you like an accredited investor or sophisticated investor? Or are you just a pleb, right? And then they will start trying to restrict like how much Bitcoin you can buy, where you can send it, what you can do with it. So all the more reason to upskill yourself, right? Learn about non-KYC Bitcoin, how to use decentralized exchanges and this sort of thing so that you can operate outside their rules. You know, focus on privacy tools, figure it all out, because the only way they're going to stop you is if you aren't skilled enough to evade them. That's the bottom line. There's open source software out there that can make you very hard to stop. Very hard to confiscate your money, very hard to stop you sending money, moving it around. But you don't get those benefits just by buying Bitcoin and leaving it on an exchange. You don't even get those benefits just by buying Bitcoin and taking it into self-custody. You actually have to learn how to use it and how to manage your UTXOs, you know, how to get organized. The good news is it's not impossible for most people, right? Like, you know, it's like driving a car. When you first got in the car, you're like, pushing the clutch, you're stalling, everything feels complicated. It feels like you have to do 7 things at once. And then after a couple of weeks, couple of months, you know, you drive without even thinking about it. So again, it's about focus. These people are going to try and stop you. Empower yourself so that they can't.
I think that's well said. The my other comment would be it's just another, it seems to be another case of rules for thee and not for me. And you know that the central bank is anyone in central banking is well connected to many people in this, you know, socioeconomic class. And they want to protect their friends and family who are worth 1.2 million or more and have an income of 580,000 or more. And but everyone else, we need to protect you. You can't have freedom money, right? Like, you know, it's absolutely insane, but very, very stereotypical of any central banker. It doesn't surprise me a bit. Tony, what do you think?
And you must wonder if these guys are drunk on drugs or just really that retarded when they make comments like this in public. Because like Rick said, there's no way you can enforce something like this in a broad sense. I mean, they can control the, you know, the little endpoints that they have in their possession, like, you know, the on-ramps and off-ramps. Those, yes, they can manipulate and coerce into accepting certain things. But Bitcoin is peer-to-peer technology. You know, it's like as open as the wind blowing. You can't stop anyone from using it. But, you know, the only way they keep you from doing that is that if you keep yourself from learning the skills to master this stuff. Like Rick said, you have to, you know, get off your ass and learn this new technology. It's not going away. It's your lifeline if you don't want to, you know, remain in this slave fiat system. And it's not nuclear science either. You know, it's just a series of new steps that, you know, you have to learn. And once you do, the whole world is at your disposal. Your time and energy literally become yours 100%. You don't need the banks. You don't need the politicians. You don't need anyone except your own head and skill set to do whatever the hell you want with your time and energy. I mean, this is your God-given right. But again, you know, they rely on mass ignorance, which sadly is still the case. But I'm optimistic that this is going to, you know, change going forward as more and more people, unfortunately, experience dire situations which will, you know, give them the kick in the ass that they need to start, you know, paying more attention.
Yeah. And what a lot of people, I think, miss too, is that even if, like, Bitcoin is ready for prime time to a large degree, and even if they shut down all the exchanges, they try turning off all the on-ramps and off-ramps, you can still go cut your neighbor's grass and accept Bitcoin. You got a hot wallet on your phone. You can move it into cold storage later. Like, it is so possible to earn Bitcoin and for us to actually transact with it. I think because it's not readily accessible and we still have the on-ramps and off-ramps, it makes it easy to be complacent. But if the day comes that there really is a lockdown and they say you've got to, you know, show proof of income or proof of, you know, assets or something to access these on-ramps and off-ramps, it's permissionless, to Rick's point. Like, it can't be stopped if you don't want them to stop you. And I think that's an important thing for people to keep in mind. And honestly, that's just the beauty of Bitcoin. It's so underappreciated, I think, by Bitcoiners. They're so used to, like, number go up and the excitement of, you know, so many things about Bitcoin. Like, that is the promise, is that we can transact without any third parties. And that is a complete breakthrough from anything we've seen, short of cash, which is very hard to scale in a global economy for the last 100 years. Alrighty, up next, a leak reveals that Russia is quietly priming Bitcoin and crypto for a price bombshell. And so the story goes on to say that that Russia is already trading with China and India in order to skirt international sanctions, which makes a lot of sense if you don't need to trust SWIFT or any third parties or a bunch of banks that you don't want to have to deal with anyways. Bitcoin seems to be a great solution to that. So, Tony, I mean, I feel like each day that goes by, I appreciate these aspects of Bitcoin more and more. And it's not because I'm a Putin sympathizer or I have no strong opinion. The point is that Bitcoin is for anyone, including your enemies, and you have the power to do with your money what you please. Tony, why don't you give your thoughts on what this might mean for, I guess, for international trade broadly, but, you know, Bitcoin in general.
Yeah, this is an extremely powerful statement because, as we clearly saw, if they can sanction an entire country from using their funds and resources at a flip of a button, like, what do you think they're going to do to you and me and everybody else if they wanted to, right? The money that we have is not yours. It's actually a weapon belonging to these people that created this Ponzi, right? And they decide to do with it whatever they please. So if, you know, a certain country is not following the narrative that they approve of, well, as you can clearly see, they just switched it off. And so when you do this to someone, when you're effectively bullying them with their own money, their reaction is normal. They're going to start looking for, you know, a solution to this problem. Like, I mean, like I said, there's only so much bullying you can do before somebody either pushes back or finds a way to render you completely irrelevant. And this is what they've done. And for the first time, you know, ever, we have Bitcoin completely decentralized, which is created specifically for situations like this. You want to block my money? Go for it. I've got an exit. I've got an option that you can't touch. Not you, not anyone on this, you know, entire universe is going to be able to stop. And so that's what they're going to do. And so this is why I believe that we are headed to a Bitcoin standard worldwide. It will become the world reserve currency because of this one fact that no one can manipulate or stop or threaten someone else with it. And that is the power of Bitcoin. So is that going to, like, send the fiat numbers, you know, to sky high levels? Absolutely. Does it matter? Of course not. It's just worthless numbers. The power of Bitcoin, peer to peer, permissionless, trustless, you don't need anyone. That is what they're going to do. And I expect not just Russia to do it. I expect everyone to follow suit up, like, I mean, to a point where, again, at some point, countries will make this into law that it is forbidden for anyone to screw around with the Bitcoin ecosystem in any way, shape, or form, because now they have a vested interest in it. That's why they're buying it, right? So this is crazy news, man. Like, I mean, I never thought we'd get to this point so fast to see all these big players right now, you know, like, bend the knee to something, you know, as innovative as Bitcoin. This is wild news, man. Very, very bullish, very, very optimistic. If you're still lingering on zero after news like this, there is something seriously wrong with you. Get off and do something with your money before you completely lose it.
Yeah, it's just so cool to see that, you know, it's all happening in the wild and without anyone imposing it. It's because of its convenience. One thing that interests me about this, though, is it seems to me like Russia, for example, or China or anyone would rather, you know, spin up their own stable coin pegged to their local currency and use that or I don't know. It's like some workaround to where they can still operate in the currencies that they would desire because they have, you know, control and authority over it, but, you know, make it, you know, less censorable or something. And I'm curious, I'm glad to see, obviously, Bitcoin, they need to stop talking about crypto so much in Russia. I think they'll figure it out eventually, but, I don't know, Rick, I'm curious to hear your take on this.
Well, maybe Michael, the Russians have already figured out, right? They've not launched a stable coin for their fiat currency because they realize that that's pretty retarded. Maybe the US, I mean, that kind of makes sense to me, right? The US has the dominant reserve currency, right? And that gives it a lot of power, a lot of ability to project power around the world. So it kind of makes sense to me that they would try and create like synthetic dollars and stable coins to try and keep the dollar relevant. Whereas the ruble, you know, I'm not even sure how interested Russia is in the ruble, right? Like it's not a significant, important currency. It's not good at holding value. I mean, no fiat is, right? But why wouldn't they just skip right to the obvious solution and say, well, hang on, we can just move value around using Bitcoin and no one can stop us, right? The future is, you know, look, it's impossible to predict. And we're not like all the other Bitcoin influencers, right? Where we're trying to tell you what's going to happen next year. But it's fascinating watching all this play out. You know, now nation states trading directly with each other, cutting out the middleman of the US state, of the United States and the US dollar. What that means, I don't know. But I think we're probably heading into a world, you know, like they say, a more multipolar world. You know, I think we'll see like the breakup of the EU, we'll see countries directly trading with one another more. And hopefully what will coincide with that is the rise of the sovereign individual that starts thinking in the same way. You know, I want to, like you said, Michael, I want to transact with my neighbor. I can just do that directly. I don't need any politician involvement. I don't need any banks involvement. Like Tony says, I think the whole world is moving in this direction. Some of us, like us three, you know, we're in a weird little bubble and we're sprinting towards it as fast as we can. And some people are going to be dragged, kicking and screaming into the future, right? Because they don't quite understand it, or it's scary, or they have vested interests where actually the status quo is what benefits them most. But we're going to see more of this. It also makes me think about, you see this a lot on Bitcoin Twitter, is like people saying, oh, the US has this many Bitcoin, the UK has this many Bitcoin, who's going to win in the race? And I'm sitting there thinking, you guys are pretty naive if you think that you have any idea how much each nation state owns in terms of Bitcoin. Because if you think the Russians haven't been using their cheap natural resources to mine Bitcoin quietly for a long time, I think that's probably a naive view. I think the same is probably true of China and maybe many, many more countries around the world, right, have built up stockpiles that we don't even know about. So this is just a glimpse into the future where the dollar's dead and we're all trading without these stupid bits of money.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's hard to imagine that at any country of any size that there isn't someone inside who understands Bitcoin well enough to articulate, we at least need to hedge our bets. Maybe they can't get a full sell on, like, you know, like an El Salvador style adoption of Bitcoin, but we need to be prepared for what the future holds, and it's not going to be the dollar forever. All righty, last one. Greenpeace is potentially facing bankruptcy due to a lawsuit, and Peter St. Hans said with no USAID to bail them out. So I think Greenpeace USA was behind the smear campaign against Bitcoin mining, funded by my dear Brad Garlinghouse over at Ripple. I think it was like a $5 or $6 million donation he made. One of the few things Brad and I disagree on. But it's uh, it's good. I feel like the world is healing, and I'll leave it to either of you to just, you know, take a couple shots at Greenpeace or have a laugh with me.
Well, Trump is taking the trash out, or at least some of it. And, you know, I'm very happy that they're at the top of that list, because I've never liked them. That smear campaign was absolutely disgusting, even though it blew up in their face several times, you know, when they created that funky little robot figurine, you know, thinking, you know, try to portray Bitcoin bad for the environment. But it ended up being like adopted by all the Bitcoiners, and it became like the most popular thing out there. Yeah, these are corrupt liars, man. These Greenpeace, I don't even know why it was put together in the first place. Just a waste of, you know, of money. Absolutely nothing good for the world from these people, other than just, you know, being paid to sell a narrative. So the more this Doge movement can clear out of this junk, I'm all for it.
Rick, you got any comments on Greenpeace?
Yeah, I mean, how long have you got? I mean, the Greenpeace guys are crazy. You know, you guys mentioned that campaign that they went on. I think they called it Change the Code, right? There's still a website. I went and checked before this call. They've still got a website. It's like changethecode.com or something.
We'll look it up.
I also went and checked their Twitter account for Change the Code, and I think their last post was from like 2023. So shows you how successful that campaign was, which was largely funded by, you know, that Muppet Brad Garlinghouse over at Riffle. The funniest thing about the Change the Code campaign that these Muppets went on is that no one's stopping you, right? You can just fork. It's open. It's like these central bankers. They don't get it. It's open source software. If you want to create a forked version of Bitcoin that, I don't know, uses proof of stake or whatever you want, no one's stopping you. And if everybody agrees that your idea is the best, then you will win, and that Bitcoin will be out the old dirty Bitcoin that you keep whinging about. But they don't do that, do they? All they want to do is like scream into the abyss. This is what Greenpeace are very good. But you shouldn't really expect much more from morons like this, right? These are the same people that just, they don't understand energy, right? Let's take solar panels, for example, or even better, wind turbines. These morons, they don't seem to understand that, like, a wind turbine needs oil to operate, right? It's got lots of moving parts that need lubricated. How do we lubricate that? Well, we lubricate it with oil. And the vast majority of the components that go to make up a wind turbine, guess what they're made out of? Oil, right? And so you take this oil out of the ground, you go and build some wind turbines, you use oil to regularly keep them spinning and service them, and then they have a short shelf life, right? They break after killing a ton of wild birds that we don't want to kill. And then you take them down and you put them all in landfill. And I promise you, if you go and Google it, go and Google wind farm, like landfill, and you'll see just huge, enormous piles of these blades of these wind farms that have come down. And the problem with these people is they're so redacted, right, that they don't realize that it would be 100 times more efficient to pull the hydrocarbons out of the ground and put them straight in the truck, right? Not pull the hydrocarbons out of the ground, turn it into a big windmill. Then, look, I'm gonna get two on my soapbox here. But yeah, these people, they're not smart people. They don't add anything to the conversation. They don't understand Bitcoin, so they don't add anything. And they want to portray Bitcoiners as people who don't care about the environment. And I absolutely think that's false. As you know, there's some really prominent Bitcoiners who show that, you know, Bitcoin mining can actually help stabilize the grid, make the grid more efficient. Quite a lot of it now, I think the majority is powered by, you know, green energy sources and all this sort of stuff. So they're just charlatans, schemers, scammers, and they take money from crypto companies just to keep themselves afloat. So, yeah, thankfully, hopefully they'll be gone soon, because they're not serious people.
One correction for you, Rick. I think by an analytics perspective, this was a wildly successful campaign, because every Bitcoiner viewed and commented every single one of their posts. So they probably had a ton of engagement throughout that whole Greenpeace USA campaign against Bitcoin, which is hilarious. And none of it, zero, were environmentalists. I swear it was hilarious and a lot of fun. But yeah, I think the world would be much better off without these people. And in terms of their grand scheme to change the code of Bitcoin, which, to your point, they could do easily, I suspect that zero Bitcoiners decided, yeah, I need to opt out of Bitcoin. It's, I mean, I don't even know what they thought they were going to accomplish here. They obviously didn't understand how it worked, and it was just that, a smear campaign. So, guys, I think that's a good place to wrap up. For everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. As always, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We would love to talk to you about how we help with 100% self-custody, where you are the sole owner of your keys. That is critical to use Bitcoin as freedom money. We also help with online privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option, to Tony's point earlier, becoming more and more important to have that backup option. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. And gentlemen, until next time, it's been a lot of fun. Looking forward to catching up here again.
Thank you, Michael.
Cheers, Michael.
Cheers, guys.